nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Alrighty, very pleasant good morning to you, as you saw on the Matthew Arrett, one of our faves. He's over, not over, but he's up somewhere in Montreal, and we're going to be talking about the deep state. In just a minute, he's in the green room, but he's not green, he's looking pretty good. We're doing all of our little social media kind of posting at the beginning of every show for a couple of minutes, because I'm totally over it. I just got off of MeWe and Parler and every place. I just don't want to do it anymore. I'm just bored with it. I just don't want to do it. So we're going to do our own little message board on One Radio Network. So you all, we say you all in Texas, so you all can talk with yourself, and also have a live stream where you can ask the guest questions rather than sending an email. So that's going to be fun. And, you know, I was out of power. I was out of water. I was out of propane. I was out of phones. I was out of everything for 10 days, and I couldn't take a shower. So I haven't recovered, so I'm not on camera because I can't wash. No, I'm just kidding. I don't like being on camera anymore much. I'm just shy. I don't know. But we're on a couple of times a week, just so you can see that I'm not falling apart, because one of my things is longevity. Anyway, so that's it. We are going to have a very interesting fellow on tomorrow, Thursday, on the 4th of March. Bear Paul Londo, and a really interesting man. And he's going to be here at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Okay, so if you'd like to join the show, we are live here this morning, March 3rd, but it's actually the afternoon, noon Central Time, noon Texas time. We are live. If you care to join the show and talk to Matthew, you can do it on the telephone, 888-663-6386. Email patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Matthew is a good guy. He is has been on several times. We like him because he's kind of a smart guy. He's editor-in-chief of the Canadian Patriot Review, a BRI expert on tactical talk. He's a regular author of Strategic Culture and all kinds of other things. He's got all kinds of books, and he's got all kinds of blogs, and CanadianPatriot.org is his main place. And so we welcome him and say hi to Matthew. And what time is it there in Canada, and how's the Queen?
Our head of state. It is 1 hour ahead of you. Uh-huh. And our head of state is, I believe, still on baby blood and life support.
Really?
But, kicking. So, no, I'm joking. I don't know that.
Sometimes you're going to have to really tell us.
It is the head of state of Canada.
Yeah. Sometimes you're going to have to tell us the host. I'm sorry. Yeah. The delay is a little bit. Matthew, sometimes you'll have to do a whole thing on how the Queen is even in Canada today, and how they got involved with South Africa, right, and China and India. I mean, boy, the UK, man, they were all over the place, weren't they, at one point?
Yeah, they were, and you know, the old saying goes, why does the sun never set on the British Empire?
Right,
because the devil never trusted the empire in the dark.
Yeah.
I think the thing that is a popular misconception is that the British Empire is something of the past that went away after World War II, and today there's an American Empire, and Canadians are fed this, Americans are fed this, British even people are fed this, and it's really the furthest thing from the truth.
Really?
The empire is still very alive, very active, very very powerful, and even though it's been using the United States as sort of their dumb giant, enforcer for the past 70 years since World War II ended, it is still the brains behind the show, like Winston Churchill said when he organized the Anglo-American Alliance for the, you know, the post-war age. He basically said, since Britain was crippled after World War II, we have to reconquer the world using British bronze and American bronze and British brains.
Mm.
So that's something that a lot of people haven't learned how to think about. So that's hopefully something we're going to be touching on a few times in this show today.
Yeah. So we've had people on the show. Joel Skousen. I'm getting a little feedback there on my voice. Do you know what that's about?
I could try something here. I'll put in my headphones.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Or, yeah, try that. See if that.
Yeah, here, try this.
How's that? Yeah. So that's, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay.
Yeah, that's great. One of the fellows we have on from time to time, he's a real contrarian, Joel Skousen. And I was running past him this whole idea, as you probably know, Matthew Arrett, that there are people out there today on March 3rd that still contend that the military is in control, right, of this country, and they're going to take over the republic, and who knows, and, you know, Joe Biden is illegitimate, and that whole thing. I mean, there's a lot of people out there talking about it. You know, is it fantasy? Is it Walt Disney? I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. The future is, making predictions is difficult, even when it involves the future, but he said, when I brought that up to him, and he's a pretty smart guy, he said, well, it ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen because the deep state control everything in this country. And all of these people are out there, like General Flynn, McEnery, and Juan, what is his name? Juan O'Salvin. And all these people, and Charlie Ward, and all these people who are running with this military is going to take over. He said they might all be good people, well-intentioned people, Juan O'Salvin, and all these people, and even General Flynn. But he believes that they're all fed propaganda, bad information from the deep state, who have control over the whole picture. And it's just, you know. So that's why I thought it'd be fun to talk to you, because you've written some things on your website that you post a lot on, CanadianPatriot.org. One was, New Revelations shed, on the British roots of the deep state. So let's dig into that. First off, do you agree with people like Skousen and others who believe that the deep state in this country really have everything well in hand and there's nothing going to be crazy going on? Do you have any theories or opinions on that?
could you elaborate a little bit more on what this person
words,
says?
In other words, Well, he just said that all of these people that are talking about, and it's very big here, I don't know, all over, you know, all over BitChute and all kinds of shows going on, like the military is in Washington, they're going to take it over, right? They're going to take it over. They're going to take over the republic and the whole thing, right? And they're going to start arresting people, the pedophiles.
Oh, I see. The QAnon.
Whole Q stuff. And he claims that that's all nonsense, and other people too, not just Skousen, that it's all nonsense. The deep state have everything well in control, that you don't become a part of the military, you know, and the forehead dudes or whatever they're called, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, unless you're part of the deep state. And that's one of the reasons why they tried to get rid of Flynn, because he wasn't one of them. Do you have any theories or research or opinions on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that the reason why a lot of the narratives surrounding I think extremes are generally dangerous territory to walk in. And for those who say it's all controlled by the deep state and there's really any apparent fight back against this empire is just an illusion.
Yes.
It's really, they're too in control. They control Russia. They control China. They control the USA. They control everybody. And there's, you know, for basically that's very disempowering. And I think it's designed to destroy any type of creative thought that people as citizens could have to think through causality and think through their personal role of problem solving and being a participant in a broader process of necessary change.
Yes.
So that's problematic for sure. And it definitely incapacitates a lot of people. And then on the other side, you have another form of incapacitation, which I've seen run rampant since 2017, which you just touched upon, which is the, don't worry, it's all part of the game. It's all part of the plan, I should say. And if something doesn't go according to the plan, it's part of the plan. If something, you know, if they call it right, it's part of the plan. Everything is part of the plan.
All right.
And I've had people who have told me, like, hey, don't worry about trying to do things. The good deep state is already embedded. They've been working for decades at infiltrating the
nothing
bad
you
deep
can do.
State. And now the good deep state nothing. Is really, they, yeah, don't worry. They've got it under control. And the thing I tend to think about as a reference is like the closest thing, if somebody asked me what I feel about QAnon is this imagery of a child in bed and, you know, telling his mom at his bedside, like, hey, there's sociopathic cannibals outside, it seems, and they want to get in the house. Shouldn't we do something, Mommy? And Mommy's like, don't worry, dear. We've thought about this. It's fine.
It's fine.
Go back to bed. There's a force field around the house. And then all of a sudden you hear a bang in the front door downstairs. And he's like, Mommy, I think the cannibals are getting in the front door. Shouldn't we do something? And Mommy's like, no, don't worry. We've thought about this whole time. Don't worry. There's a trap door in front of the door downstairs. It's fine. Don't worry. Go back to bed. And then it's like, Mommy, I hear them walking up the staircase. Mommy, shouldn't we do something? And Mom's like, no, don't worry. We thought about this. There's an electrified, field around your door. Don't worry. It's okay. The kid's like, Mommy, I hear the door opening. Mommy, where are you? And I think that's sort of the thing, you know, like there is definitely a misdirection where people who could have been organizing themselves in a more constructive way for the past 4 years are turning themselves out of their potential in favor of the narratives that are being spun by people like Steve Pietznuk, who's, you know, this is for me like one of the key figures if you want to get it. Where do these narratives come from? I think looking at Steve Pietznuk, you know who that is?
Is that the former CIA guy?
Yeah. He's a trilateral commission. He was a former assistant secretary of state under Henry Kissinger Robert Gates and Cyrus Vance in the 70s. He's a psychiatrist who worked with the Rand Corporation, Trilateral Commission, CFR. And then, you know, he's a crisis management guy from the 80s. He started working with... who's Tom Clancy, you know, who is already, we know from the 80s, from the Hunt for Red October, this guy was recruited early on by the CIA as part of the predictive programming operations in Hollywood and in fiction. So a lot of the fiction that's given to us in book and TV and film format are designed specifically to create a predictive field in the imaginations of the target audience.
Wow.
So, I mean... We know that Tom Clancy has been a part of that openly. The CIA even admits to working with Tom Clancy for a long time. And then so Steve Pietznuk has been working with him, co-writing fiction books now for quite some time. So this is the guy who came out originally sort of spinning and weaving the tales of the QAnon thing, like giving messaging from the secret nexus of white hats to the masses as a transmitter, which is, I think, it's created a huge movement. And part of this works because there is actual resistance going on. You know, like we know that the reason we didn't bomb Iran in 2007, when we know that Dick Cheney was on the cusp of launching a strike on Iran for their alleged nuclear weapons program, this was blocked because Dick Cheney had to go in for heart surgery. And that very moment he went to the hospital, he was out of sort of a power position.
Right.
He was the power behind the throne under Bush Jr.
Yeah.
That's when you had the national intelligence estimate. So patriotic individuals within the CIA released publicly their NIE report, which was never supposed to be made public, in 2007 in December, which proved conclusively that Iran had abandoned all of their nuclear weapons ambitions in 2002. And that took all the wind out of the sails of the war drive that was supposed to happen. So we know that there are forces who do not want nuclear war, who have patriotic impulses within intelligence, within military. We know that. So the reason why the QAnon thing works is because it touches upon truths, but then it embellishes and creates a whole fictitious narrative around that, which I think, again, pulls people into the David Icke, Charlie Park, the guy who believes, or Simon Parks.
Right.
Yeah, who believes that he's fathered an 8-foot alien child, you know, like, like it takes you into this world where you detach your reason from discovering reality. Like you start just believing and wanting to be fed more and more elaborate stories.
Yes, sir.
Which again, it's like pooping in the punch bowl. You remove any potency that people could otherwise have to be human and to be problem solvers. So that's my thought.
Yeah, I understand. And I think you know, people like Skousen, and we like him, and I think he's a pretty interesting guy, and he's got a lot of good stuff. But it's almost like this culture with YouTube and the videos and the talk shows, and there's a billion of them, as you know, Matthew, that it's almost like people have this tendency to need to be to the extremes because they think that they need to do this to get viewers or listeners, you know, like, You know, it's you know, I guess it's just human nature,
partially.
Right? It's kind of,
yeah, I mean, partially, I think that, and on some level, that's probably what's motivating some people. And on another more insidious level, I do think that there might be, like, you know, some of these good people who are, I believe that they're good. I believe, sure, you know, a variety of them, maybe 107 is, sure, is good. Yeah. I think that that's possible. But I think they are getting phone calls and they're being told things, expecting them to transmit this to their followers. And they believe the message of what they're getting on the phone.
Yes, sir.
Yep. From whatever it is, these anonymous figures representing John F. Kennedy Jr., who's right, apparently still alive, running this thing. right. So I'm sure that most of them probably believe that. So they're not disgenuine in that sense. But I think that there might be, and likely is in my thinking, a more nefarious intention overriding this thing. Because, I mean, this came out of nowhere in 2017, right? It really was something that, and it has certain precedents and protocols from the anyway, that's a whole other discussion.
No, but I understand.
Yeah, I do think that there's some nefarious intent.
I understand. I asked Jill, just to put a little cherry on that, I don't want to pick on the guy because he's not here, but I asked Mr. Skousen how long he thought the whole masking thing was going to go on, right? And this was last week. Mm-hmm. And he said forever. They're just not going to ever do it. Well, I mean, it's not true. I mean, Texas yesterday said, we're done. We're not going to do it anymore. So it's easy to, you know, take these extremes and, you know, and so, well, let's talk about this deep state. So my understanding, is it the deep state here would it be the NSA, the CIA, the FBI? Would these be the main players of what we're called the deep state in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, these are all different aspects of the same beast, I think. You know, a lot of the institutions, the intelligence agencies, things that are tied to the Five Eyes, like the NSA is sort of the branch of the Five Eyes inside of the USA, but the Five Eyes represents all of the major Anglo-Saxon Commonwealth countries plus the USA. That was set up as an intelligence-sharing octopus, a five-legged octopus. Throughout the Cold War, so the GCHQ is the expression in Britain. There's expressions in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and to say that it's just the NSA is folly. It obviously, this is an intersection and overlap of, yes, you have the FBI as more of an internal organizing secret police, then you have the CIA as a primarily foreign, operation dealing with foreign policy, and then, you know, you have other aspects of this, and there are so many other aspects of intelligence agencies. But I think the coordinating tool, these are largely the muscle to get things done. Mm-hmm. But the intention and grand strategy, as well as tactical strategizing as concepts are concerned, I think you have to look a little bit more at certain think tanks that were set up. I mean, in my current article that you've put on your website,
yeah,
on the new revelations shed light on the British roots of the deep state, I make the point that things like the Council on Foreign Relations is a very important tool. This is what Hillary Clinton called the mothership. It's just down the street, you know, from the White House, their headquarters, and the mothership. What is the CFR? I mean, people recognize that this has been a powerful institution. It runs other liberal think tanks like the Brookings Institute. It's sort of a subsidiary of this that was set up even earlier in 1909, but it's sort of run hierarchically that way. And there's many other dozens and dozens of powerful think tanks that are all enmeshed. But the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, was set up in 1921 as a British operation in the USA. In my paper, I get across that there's a new data dump of internal documents that's been released to the public just last week, which is very useful because these are thousands of incredible original forms and data going through the Integrity Initiative, going through Bellingcat, the Institute for Statecraft. These are all British think tanks that are all funded by the British Foreign Office. And it goes through all of the clusters of operatives that were created by these, especially Integrity Initiative, which was set up in 2015 to counter Russian propaganda and misnarratives. But it's so much deeper than that. And tens and tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars have been put into organizing clusters in every country of journalists, of people working in the governments, different type of civil servants and beyond in Greece. And it goes through the list of who they are. Who are these contact people that we've recruited in Greece, in France, in Serbia, in the USA, in all of the countries of the world? It goes through how much they're getting paid by the British Foreign Office. It goes through how they organize things like the Skripal affair that created the biggest rifts in modern times between the West and Russia by blaming, you know, Putin on trying to kill Sergei Skripal using Novichok, which was a complete British operation entirely. And many authors have proved this. These data dumps prove it entirely as well, that it was all scripted to create a preparation for really a war with Russia and also ultimately with China. And this gets across that the USA, China, and Russia have ultimately the same enemies. So even though a lot of Americans have been led to believe by, you know, Epoch Times, a lot of the mainstream media, that China is the big bad enemy behind the scenes trying to run the show and create the New World Order, and other Americans who tend to be more left tend to believe that it's Russia that's behind the scenes running the world, the New World Order, and they're the ones putting their puppet President Trump in power. It's actually not the case on both extremes. Both sides are missing the British intelligence City of London angle to all of this. So what I try to do in this essay is just get across that this is a springboard to understanding the deeper British takeover of U.S. internal and foreign policy, which goes back many generations into the past. So the Council on Foreign Relations set the stage, and people think, but isn't that an American organization? Well, you'd think so. But really, this was set up by the Royal Institute for International Affairs in 1921. And that today is known as Chatham House. That's the most powerful think tank in the British Commonwealth and the world. So Chatham House, this is the organization that Henry Kissinger spoke at in 1981, when he said that during his time as Secretary of State under Nixon, he spent more time briefing the British Foreign Office than he did his own State Department. And he also describes in this famous speech how when looking at the battles over what the post-war era was going to look like between Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Winston Churchill, Kissinger says, "I much preferred Winston Churchill's wisdom over the folly of Franklin Roosevelt." Because Franklin Roosevelt, for those who actually know their history, would see that, would get a lot of insight out of what Kissinger just said. Because what did Franklin Roosevelt want for the post-war world? He wanted a world of cooperating sovereign nation states capable of developing full-spectrum economies built around a China-US-Russia alliance. I mean, that's why Churchill hated FDR so badly, because Churchill wanted a one-world government with a U.S.-British-Anglo-American special relationship to enforce their colony program onto the world. And Roosevelt was in opposition. He said, no, what we did in the New Deal by building the Tennessee Valley Authority and the rural electrification projects and all of this, this is something we should be providing through long-term loans to other countries in Africa and South America and India and beyond to develop themselves, to stand on their own two feet. And that he made total enemies. So what I make a point in this paper is that FDR's vice president, Henry Wallace, shared Franklin Roosevelt's vision. And this is what Kissinger hates as well. Like, this is what Kissinger devoted his life to destroy in the United States during all of his time, his decades of influence as a U.S. foreign policy maker and member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So Wallace had said and warned in 1944 that fascism in the post-war era inevitably will push steadily for Anglo-Saxon imperialism and eventually for war with Russia. Already American fascists are talking and writing about this conflict and using it as an excuse for their internal hatreds and intolerances towards certain races, creeds, and classes.
Wow, what is
and
that?
This is 1944.
Wow, look, what does that sound like today, right? Whoa.
Yeah. No, exactly. This is before the Cold War started. I mean, and Wallace was a major... If he had succeeded in his presidential bid in 1948, and also if he had not been kicked out of the vice presidency in favor of Harry Truman, who was a Wall Street lackey who loved Churchill, had that not happened, there would not have been a Cold War. It's a fact. It would not have happened. The world would have unfolded very differently, with a world of mutually sovereign nation states cooperating on big projects that elevate the standards of living of everybody along the way. Kind of like what China is doing today with the Belt and Road Initiative, where 135 nations representing all of the different cultures and religions of the world are working already on a framework to build and work on these giant infrastructure projects for high-speed rail and water projects, greening deserts. It's all happening right now on that part of the world, which is ironic because that's acting more American in so many ways than the America that we are seeing today under Biden. And I think that
so all of so the, when excuse me mm-hmm. so all of these things that we're seeing, like the Black Lives Matter and all of the separating people, men and women, black and white people, and all of the deplorables and the domestic terrorists who don't agree with the globalists, this has all been in the works for a long time, and it's all being perpetrated by these same big you know, all the way back to Britain. This is their plan. This is what they want as part of this whole one world government thing.
Yeah, like the origins, the roots, if you want to get at the heart of the Five Eyes, you have to look at the collapsing British Empire at the end of the 19th century, and then Cecil Rhodes. So what was happening around the 1860s to the 1902 period when Cecil Rhodes dies and creates his Rhodes Trust, his entire will bequeaths all of his fortunes that he accumulated as a diamond and resource magnate in South Africa, what's today called, or what was then called Rhodesia. Yeah. He was the head of Rhodesia. It was based on his name. So he basically raped Africa for a long time, extracted a lot of money, created a small fortune, large fortune actually, with the help of the Rothschilds in London. Mm-hmm. He interfaced very closely with Lord Palmerston in the British Foreign Office. And he bequeaths his money to a policy of reconquering the world and creating a new British Empire with a focus on taking back control of its lost colony, the United States. And he literally says in his 1877 will that defines sort of the manifesto, it's sort of the constitution of how the Rhodes Trust is going to work. I pulled out a little quote in my article, which I'll just read here quickly. It's short. But he said, "Why should we not form a secret society with but one object, the furtherance of the British Empire and the bringing of the whole of uncivilized world under British rule for the recovery of the United States and for the making of the Anglo-Saxon race but one empire?" That's the heart of the Five Eyes. So this is, he's writing this in 1877. His will is activated with the creation of the Rhodes Trust in 1902. With the Rhodes Trust comes two organizations that involve a new type of technique to do what he desires, which is creating a Rhodes Scholarship program.
Yes.
And up until now, there's been thousands upon thousands of young talent from around the world who have been recruited to and given Rhodes scholarships.
Like Clinton.
What this means, I mean,
Clinton, Kerry.
Clinton is one.
Yeah,
exactly. There's many in the Biden administration currently. Mm-hmm. Kerry is not a Rhodes Scholar, no.
Oh, he's not. I thought he was.
Yeah, skull and bones, but again, very, very enmeshed.
Yeah.
There's many in the Biden cabinet right now. Susan Rice is one of them. The current science czar, Eric, I'm forgetting his name, the guy who headed the Human Genome Project was one of them. Anyway.
Rhodes Scholars, right?
They're Rhodes Scholars. Oh. So what this is you search and look for people around the world who have talent, who are young people with passion, and you indoctrinate them. You give them a special indoctrination, all expenses paid, and then you deploy them back to their home countries to infiltrate and grow in influence in anything that they can permeate. This think tank, there was a think tank set up called the Roundtable Movement, headed by Rhodes's prodigy, Lord Alfred Milner, who basically made his fortune and reputation destroying the Transvaal Republic uprisings in the Boer Wars, where you had Dutch Republican settlers working with the Zulus, who had been both suppressed by British intelligence and British imperial operations, and they both rebelled to create a republic. It was called the Transvaal Uprisings, and they were suppressed. Concentration camps were created by Lord Milner and the Rhodes Network. Milner had a kindergarten of young sociopathic agents that were working with him through the British office in South Africa, where they innovated the concentration camp program that was later deployed and used by Hitler much, much later on, but it was innovated then. And And basically, these guys all became the heads of the Roundtable movement. Leo Amery, Lord Lothian, others who became leading figures that Henry Wallace and Franklin Roosevelt fought against deeply throughout the entire 30s and 40s, who worked with the City of London and Wall Street to create a fascist machine to destroy nation states, essentially, and create a one world government ruled not by Hitler, but Hitler was supposed to be, with Mussolini and Franco, sort of enforcers of an imperial will, kind of like what Dick Cheney was supposed to be, or what they want the U.S. to be under their doctrine. Is the U.S. is supposed to be the physical enforcer of the will of a higher technocratic elite. That was the same logic that was used back then. FDR, Wallace were in opposition. But all that to say, so you had the Roundtable movement and the Rhodes Scholarship Program. They're both coordinating. They were both funded by the Rhodes Trust. The reason why was because, and I'll say a bit about what came a little bit before that and a little bit after that. All right. Because this is what created the Council on Foreign Relations. That came in 1921 as the creation by the Roundtable movement. But what were they trying to stop? The British Empire in the 1880s, 1890s was quite weak, and the entire world was adopting Abraham Lincoln's American system of protective tariffs, uh-huh, of national public credit,
yeah,
investments into rail that would develop the inland continental power of a nation, so that nations were no longer reliant upon maritime trade, which is how the British Empire was able to always run the world for hundreds of years, was, sure, by controlling, sure, just, you know, 13 choke points on maritime trade and ports strategically around the world. They were able, just by controlling these choke points, to control the flow of trade, the goods, and everything else on the world map. So by nations actually developing their inland resources and creating full spectrum industrial economies, they were able to stand on their own two feet and not be reliant upon the British controllers. They were also, by creating national banking, which is what Lincoln did with the greenbacks,
yes,
as, yeah, part of the American constitutional banking tradition.
Yeah.
Places like Russia, like Meiji's Japan, like France, like Germany's Otto von Bismarck were, mm-hmm, able to create the Zollverein and to fund these large scale projects for replicating the success of the best of the USA in their own countries. And this was understood as the new paradigm for mankind going into our next phase of evolution. It was understood by all participants that this was the idea of a unipolar world order controlled by a Hobbesian elite from the top was obsolete, and the British Empire, its evil had been shown to the world. Nobody wanted that anymore.
Wow. It almost sounds a bit, Matthew, like what President Trump, a bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, with his policies, infrastructure, yeah, and all of that, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's all based, the American system is based on every nation first. It only, globalization is fine as long as you define globalization not by worshiping money, but rather by every nation on the globe, hmm, working as neighbors on their own interests. So, yeah, you have to really care about your own well-being.
Right.
If everybody cares about their own well-being, they're going to treat their neighbors well as well.
Yes.
They won't be afraid of their neighbors who are jealous of them because they've stolen and wrecked their neighbors' economies, as we have to so many of the world today. You know, there's no insecurity in that sense because everybody has a sense of trust in their neighbors who see that, okay, it's in my interest to help my neighbor get better. Not, yes, to suppress my neighbor and undercut them.
And wasn't that Donald Trump's message at Davos last year?
Yeah,
he was exactly telling them all, why don't you guys take care of yourself? You should take care of yourself. He, yeah, said that. So yeah, this is
every nation first.
So this, yeah, is, these are the forces that have been trying to get rid of this man for 4 years and still trying to keep him, yeah, from running again today.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Wow.
And thank God Donald Trump is still
you know, swinging,
showcasing a real fighting spirit. I really am enlivened by that.
Huh.
Interesting. Being a Canadian, I find that very important. But this is important too, because in 1902, the same year that Rhodes dies and creates his will and this whole new organizing strategy to reconquer the U.S., this is the same year William McKinley,
yeah,
had just passed away. He had just been assassinated in 1901, the year before that, and Teddy Roosevelt is just coming in now, in 1902, as the new president, who's just like how Franklin Roosevelt dies as a patriot, and then now over his dead body, you have Harry Truman, his vice president, who's installed and takes power as an Anglophile tool. Same thing for Teddy Roosevelt, Anglophile tool, imperialist, eugenicist, but Teddy Roosevelt, William McKinley,
yeah,
William McKinley was a Civil War veteran, a lover of the principle of the American system of national sovereignty and the idea of every nation working together. And he was the last president to really talk about openly the American system until Donald Trump did it in 2017 and started re-invoking the McKinley tariff, the idea of infrastructure. So it's very similar to what they were trying to quash back then. And for after McKinley dies, it's really 30 years of hell where, you know, you have these networks orchestrating the Bolshevik Revolution, interfacing with their J.P. Morgan, because the Rockefeller Foundation, the Rockefeller family, J.P. Morgan itself was a British bank in the 1850s. People forget that. It was a British bank, something Peabody, that was then infused into America in 1852 as a way for the city of London to start buying up and trying to control American railroads and industry and corrupt it from within. And that's where the Morgan family got in and the name was changed. The Rockefellers, you know, they started originally perhaps as a pro-industrial group, but they quickly became absorbed into this City of London, you know, operation very, very quickly.
And didn't McKinley also really mess with the money too? He wanted to really do something with the bankers, and wasn't that one of the reasons why he was assassinated? So the story goes.
Yeah. Like he had a whole program to develop mass infrastructure, including for South America and Central America. He had a program to do a lot of that, and it was going to be through state funding of a sort of greenback style program for productive credit. So yeah, he was trying to revive that, which is, you know, it was vital. And I mean, before him, you had Garfield, who was just assassinated in 1880. Yeah. Lincoln had been assassinated. And then until Franklin Roosevelt, you only have one guy who tries to bring it back in 1921, which is Warren Harding. And Harding is sort of the last of that anti-imperial Republican breed who comes out. He says no to the League of Nations, because the League of Nations was, again, a Milner creation. That's why the Roundtable Movement took control of Britain by ousting Herbert Asquith in 1916 so that they could control the terms of the post-war arrangements for the Versailles Treaty, which was designed to crush and destroy the American system policies still alive in Germany, because Germany was not Hitler at that time. It was a different type of beast back then. They were still under the Otto von Bismarck Frederick List policy in Germany, and that's what Britain was afraid of and had to be crushed. So when the Roundtable Movement created the Versailles Treaty, they also created the League of Nations as sort of a program to create a one-world government. It was like a Great Reset. They applied their policy to create hyperinflation in Germany, to destroy them by forcing them to just money print to pay unpayable war debts. And it was the League of Nations world government strategy was resisted by patriots in the U.S. who had taken back control after 20 years of traitors, like, you know, we saw. And that was under Warren Harding. And Warren Harding did a lot as well in that direction, but his presidency was cut short because he's only there for 2 years. Until what happens? He's on a train, he eats some bad oysters and dies.
Very suspicious. I hate it when that happens. No autopsy, right? So after Harding, these people have had control of the presidency in the United States pretty much until Trump?
No. Because that was, you had then, the Morgan machine took total control under Coolidge and Hoover. Coolidge was the worst, but the guy who was really the driving controller of all this whole thing was Andrew Mellon, the Treasury Secretary, who ran the Federal Reserve policy.
New York Mellon Bank, right? New York Mellon Bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, baby.
And
big bank.
And that's what regulated the economy. It created mass speculation throughout the 1920s, the Roaring Twenties. And that's resulted in the bubble that was then popped at a certain strategic moment in 1929 to create the conditions of trauma in the population, who would then be able to accept, they thought, the unacceptable, which was fascism as the economic solution, which was always what they wanted. That's sort of like what they're doing today. They want to create, with the current bubble collapse that they're setting up, they want to create a shock therapy into the population for a certain period so that people will become extra, extra mushy and desperate to feed their families and accept any type of thing which the Great Reset crowd wants to bring.
Let's talk about that, because that's really curious, because this whole term fascism keeps coming up, which is even, it looks like, it feels like what's going on in this country is more fascism than socialism or liberalism or, right? I mean, it's, so let's talk about that, but we need to do a little commercial first, okay? But, and also, you know, on this shot, I'm losing you a little bit on your right side. You just, You too. I just don't want to lose half your head there. You stay right there. Matthew Arrett. What a cool guy. Well, now, this is interesting stuff. I mean, this is one of the reasons why you want to come to One Radio Network and listen to people like Matthew. I mean, you think you're going to get this kind of information or this kind of stuff from CNN or Fox or anybody else? I mean, I don't know how he even gets all this stuff. Crazy. It's great. I love to look at the deep into what's going on. Matthew Arrett, he's here from time to time. Patrick Timpone, and if you'd like to get a great little tool, we'll listen to this. Previously with cardiologist Dr. Joel Kahn, 35 years experience in cardiology.
On your commercial break, you hit a hot button because I'm a giant fan of infrared sauna and the cardiac benefits.
Tell us about why you like these saunas for the heart. What does it do?
In Japan, it's a traditional therapy of heart disease to even sick heart patients to sit for 15 or 20 minutes in an infrared sauna, then lie down and rest and hydrate for about half an hour. They call it Waon, W-A-O-N. It means soothing heat. And they've done research studies, like 30 of them, in humans. Anti-ages your arteries and improves the strength of your heart, and it may actually prolong survival in sick heart patients. Anybody can just, again, go to the internet, read about infrared sauna heart disease, or put my name there because I've written many articles about it. Now there's data coming out of Sweden and Finland because they've published some amazing data. The number of times a week you're in a sauna, number of minutes each time, you can just track out how long you're going to live. So very powerful therapy by being in, my favorite is an infrared sauna.
Well, I don't know about you, but if the heart muscles and the arteries are happy, things are good. Indeed, and this is just a great tool. I'm in mine, not that it matters what I do, because, you know, it just doesn't matter what I do, but I'm in mine virtually every day of my life. And these are very low EMFs, and you can see a picture there if you're watching on video, or if you're not, you can go on One Radio Network and click on it and watch it, and you can see the way it looks. It's got this silver material, which is kind of antibacterial stuff, and you have a very nice chair, very sturdy chair, not some kind of weird rickety chair. And you just put a towel over that, and you sit in there with your head out. And we know after years of looking at this idea that it's not good to heat up your head like with a sauna that, gets your whole head out. You don't want to do that. It's good to have a hot booty and a cool head. I don't know where I heard that. But these saunas are great. If you'd like to get one, the only way to get the best price is to email me, Patrick, your congenial host, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. The price is $1,195 delivered in the lower 48. We ship them all over the world. Where Matthew lives in Montreal, I think it would cost Matthew about, another $150. But he's on the team here, so we'll probably give him even a discount if he wants one. Anyway, these are great tools. The Relax Far Infrared Sauna, email me and I'll hook you up. We sell quite a few of them. People love them, and I think you'll enjoy them. OneRadioNetwork.com. Have you ever tried the Elk Velvet Antler?
Starving for vitality, we're turning to energy drinks, stimulants, and pharmaceuticals to try to improve our focus, increase our metabolism, rescue our sex drive, and adapt to the stresses of modern day living. Each year, an elk sheds its impressive antlers, regenerating an even larger set the following year. These velvet antlers have been a revered traditional medicine for thousands of years. Elk antler harnesses the adaptogenic and highly regenerative growth factors from this natural and ethical resource into a concentrated, bioavailable extraction. Its revitalizing effects span bone, muscle, and nerve support, improve metabolism, cellular repair, sexual potency, anti-inflammation, vascular strengthening, and hormone production. Humanely harvested from free-range U.S. elk, extracted in organic alcohol, and protected in mirror on glass, our elk antler is available in three strengths to restore your vitality at any level.
Now, if you go on Thrival today, which we are live here on March 3rd, 2021, in the afternoon, you can then also get yourself 20% off on all colostrum products on SirThrival. Use promo code HEALTHY2021. One more day, 20% off on all colostrum products. It's a great product, so you might want to try it. I don't know if you've ever experienced Andreas seed oils. We've known Andreas for a long time. He's a fascinating fellow, a German gymnast. He was a gold medal kind of guy, and they used to fill him full of steroids and all kinds of drugs so he would win. And how'd they do that, you know? And he actually healed himself with fresh pressed flaxseed oil that a neighbor of his, he was in the hospital and he was going to die. And he said, I got to get out of here. He went home and pretty much on his deathbed, and his neighbor started to give him fresh pressed flax oil that he just did himself. And he made a recovery, and he was really in bad shape from all of these drugs that they gave him so he could jump higher and all of that. And so this put him on this whole plan to produce the finest seed oils ever. And they're remarkable. They're black cumin seed oil, a coriander seed oil, a pumpkin seed oil, black sesame seed oil, hemp seed oil, and a sunflower seed oil. And these are seed oils that are pressed with virtually no friction, no heat. So the oxidation in these oils are just non-existent. And most oils out there, God love them, even at the hippie food store in the refrigerator, they're not very good for you. Most of them are rancid. And so you don't want to mess with them, especially, you know, at the Kroger or the Safeway with clear glass bottles of, you know, these oils. You don't want to do that at all. But even the hippie food stores, these oils are not that good. God, they try cold pressed and all that. But these are premier oils, the best. They're all in Myron glass. And these are the really, in my opinion, the only kind of oils you want to put in your body. They're very healing. Black cumin seed, you can Google some of these oils. And they've been known to use for, hundreds of years for healing properties. For example, with ulcers, black cumin seed oil, practically the best thing you could ever do if you had an ulcer from, politics or something. So anyway, check them out. It's a great company. It's Andreas Seed Oils on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source. One Radio Network. Know the source. The source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
That's one of the things we pride ourselves in of kind of knowing all of the products. We know the people, so we appreciate if you need some things that take care of your health, that you'll come to our website and see if you find some things that are interesting to you. Matthew Arrett is with it, CanadianPatriot.org. It's a .org, the Patriot, that's a .org, right? Yeah. What happened to your audio? Wait a minute. I lost your audio.
Yeah, it's the power of the mute button.
That's okay. Yeah. So it's a .org.
My cat was making noise, and I was just
Matthew. I really appreciate you coming on from time to time. I mean, you're a fancy dresser there with your vest, and I'm sure you got, look at all those books. I know you got a lot of things to do. So I appreciate you coming on. It's an honor to have you. It's so fun. I don't know how you remember all this stuff. You read these books and you do this research. How do you remember all these pieces, parts? I don't know. How's that even possible?
I don't know.
Okay. So let's talk about what's going on now. So let's just lay the groundwork. So you've given us a little background. So what we're experiencing now with whoever are controlling the Biden administration, getting back in the WHO, getting back in the Paris Treaty, getting the Agenda 21 thing up and running, the Green New Deal, right? NATO, the UN, Fauci's out there saying, no, you got to wear a mask for another year. So who are these people? And in the term of fascism, anybody that is contradicting what they are saying, as you know, they're getting censored. We're off of YouTube, Vimeo, you know, everywhere. They just censored us, one radio network. Anybody that's anybody that's saying anything that's reasonable, they just censor you. So this is pure fascism, right? I mean, who are these people and what is their goal? Why do they care about Robert F. Kennedy questioning vaccines and you know, and censoring him from a telegram and from Instagram? I mean, why do they care? You know, what's their goal?
Well, before the commercial segment, just out of curiosity, how much time do we still have left?
Whatever you want, brother. I'm with you, man. Let's go for it.
Okay. All right.
I got nowhere to go.
Flexible.
I got nowhere to go.
I'm good too. Yeah, it's okay. Good. Well, before the commercial break, you'd mentioned what is fascism, and
let's do that quote that I really liked
a lot, and I think that'll give us a way to sort of zero in on that question of who it is, because I personally think that it matters less who is doing this versus why and how this is happening. Obviously, the who's matter, but it's like, you know, who killed Kennedy? What were their names of all of the individual, like, you know, three, five, six shooters? It matters less what their names are, you know, and what they did for the next 40 years with their money. It matters how and why was Kennedy killed? What was Kennedy doing? Which power structures was he removing power from by his policy actions?
Yes,
right. That gets you a little bit more into an empowering place to understand what's controlling your current situation, and also what are the insecurities of the empire? What are the things that it is afraid of?
Their Achilles heel.
That's really their
Achilles heel.
Yeah.
What are they afraid of?
Exactly.
Yeah. Good.
That's what we want to expand our insight into, because there are pathways, natural, lawful pathways that can be taken, which can reduce their power structure, which they're afraid of. So we want to, whatever the enemy is afraid of, we want to do more of that.
Yes.
And it's not always the self-evident thing that one might believe naively to be the case. But all that to say, what FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, he defined fascism in, I think, a very useful way in 1938, when he said, "Unhappy events abroad have retaught us two simple truths about the liberty of a democratic people. The first truth is that the liberty of a democracy is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of private power to the point where it becomes stronger than their democratic state itself. That, in essence, is fascism. Ownership of government by an individual, by a group, or by any other controlling private power." And I think that gets us into the essence of fascism. It's maybe not the full definition, but that if you want to look at what exactly happened for the next, you know, after FDR died in April 12, 1945, Wallace was completely ousted from government by 1946. He was, you know, downgraded to Commerce Secretary, and he was ousted because he was considered a Russian agent, and he was in opposition to the Cold War, which every patriot must be in support of the Cold War. And so all of the instruments that FDR and Wallace and others like Harry Dexter White had created from Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, 1944, like the IMF, the World Bank, the United Nations, these were all corrupted and infiltrated and taken over by their enemies. And there's another quote in my article by FDR right before he dies. He has a conversation with his son, who writes a book, where FDR says that there are people within his own State Department who he I've lost my quote. Anyway, but That's he right. describes to his son how his own State Department is operating under the control of the British Foreign Office, and how he is the only person that he himself can trust. Now he dies again, just like Warren Harding. We'll never really know why or how he died. Or we won't know how he died, because there was never an autopsy on his body either. But Stalin believed, in an interview with FDR's son in 1946, Stalin said that he believed that it was Churchill's people who poisoned his father, Franklin. So we know that in the ensuing decades, the U.S. was increasingly taken over. Patriots were increasingly purged from power structures of influence. John F. Kennedy represented a restoration of a patriotic impulse in 1961 until his death in 63. He had the help of certain people who guided him, like Charles de Gaulle, like Eisenhower at different times. Eisenhower was a fool for much of his presidency, but you know, he wasn't a traitor himself. He was just a fool. He trusted the wrong people. And he woke up to it in his famous, you know, military industrial complex speech, on his outgoing speech. And he spent a lot of time working also with Douglas MacArthur to educate Kennedy. So him and his brother Robert became much more aware than his enemies realized he was going to be able to navigate through the minefield. And he put a lot of things into motion. He tried to create a silverback currency to bypass yes. The Federal Reserve using treasury bills. A lot of these were even created and circulated, and they were designed to fund the growth of continental water projects. Kennedy had greenlighted so many water projects for the West Coast that were moving towards a total paradigm of continental water management that would have involved water from Alaska moving down into California and Texas, which would have, I mean, there wouldn't be a water problem or of any sort in the West Coast or Southwest Coast of the USA today had his policies not been sabotaged with his death. He also did the space program as a way to kindle a certain optimistic future orientation in the population, which was very important, and offered Russia the chance to work together with the USA to jointly put a man on the moon instead of it being a unilateral thing. So these were all ideas that would have canceled the Cold War. It would have taken all of the tension out of those who wanted to maintain a system of a strategy of global, you know, left versus right, capitalist versus communist tension and nuclear terror, which psychologically traumatized the whole generation of young people who became, you know, today's baby boomer generation, who have really carried the scars of that experience with them throughout the years. It's part of a psychological global effect, and it was designed to be that way, to make a certain generation become very conducive to manipulation. That was laid out by people like Aldous Huxley or his brother Julian Huxley, who said very clearly in 1946, when Julian Huxley, who was the president at the time of the eugenics, the British Eugenics Association, Julian Huxley creates, he becomes the first founder of UNESCO, the United Nations Education, Science, and Cultural Organization. And he lays out in the manifesto, the UNESCO, its purpose and philosophy that people could still read online. He lays out very clearly that the purpose of the re-education, of the revamping of world educational norms that the UNESCO would be responsible for, must be to create a new ethic where he says eugenics, and he says it, it's not me saying this, he says it in the thing, that eugenics is the most important branch of social science ever created by mankind, to take sort of the control of evolution Darwinianly from the hands of nature into the hands of human social engineers. And he's clear on that. And he says Hitler has made these things unthinkable currently because people saw the logical consequence to applying these ivory tower theories in a fascist state. So people had become horrified by the killing of useless eaters and sterilization of the unfit and all of this stuff. But he says it's still very important as a science, even though we don't like how Hitler might have done it. So we have to make the unthinkable once again become thinkable. And that's all in the UNESCO founding document. He's the guy who goes on to create the term transhumanism. That's Julian Huxley. He goes on to create the environmentalist movement. He co-founds the World Wildlife Fund for Nature with Prince Philip and Prince Bernhard in 1961. He works closely with the British Privy Council in the creation of the Conservation Trust, which he also co-founds in 1947, as a way to take the fascist population control policies of the 1930s that Hitler had put into force, and then rewire them and give them a new sort of image around protecting nature from human technological infrastructure creation. Because human beings, they basically said, we have to, instead of thinking that human beings' problems come from empires trying to rape and impose injustice on the world, it's not that's the problem. It's human beings themselves that they had to convince us was the problem. It's our very act of trying to make life better for our children by using infrastructure and science and technology and progress and nuclear power and all of these things for the good of our kids and future. That's what we had to convince ourselves, or be convinced that was the enemy. And every time we try to make an infrastructure project, like moving water from one place that has a lot of water to a place that has a little bit of water through dams and water diversion projects that JFK was doing, that obviously transforms the balances of the desert that's now becoming green with fresh water, you know? So that's unnatural. That's bad. When you have industrial activity that involves removing poverty from a nation, you create energy that uses, you know, natural gas or fossil fuel. I don't even like calling it fossil fuels, but, you know, you burn things as far as giving people electricity and industry that creates the effect of carbon dioxide as an emission. They found a way to try to say, okay, let's use a statistical analysis to connect carbon dioxide with the Earth climate changing. And at the time, in the late 60s and 70s, they were trying to link it to the global cooling, because the world had been cooling right. from 1945 until 77. Right. And they were saying, oh, you could pick up the old National Geographics funded by with research studies funded by the World Wildlife Fund connected networks back then, that were saying, you know, it's carbon dioxide emissions that are causing global cooling. That's what they were saying. And Leonard Nimoy has a little documentary on YouTube really? Where he's hosting, you know, he's paid to host the global cooling crisis caused by pollution. And then all of a sudden, when the cooling stopped and there was a warming trend from 1977 until like 2001, that was a general trend of warming. Uh-huh. Then they said, okay, well, let's just rewire the argument so that still the enemy is industrial output, but now we'll just say it's causing another thing. And today it's another thing, you know, now they're just saying it's climate changing. It's because the warming had sort of plateaued in 2001. Now it's been sort of like not really warming anymore, and it's just random changes, and it used to be called the weather. But they're still trying to blame it all on carbon dioxide, which is why the Paris Climate Accords yeah. are all about reducing carbon output right. down right. by to like pre-industrial levels. What they're actually saying is we need to reduce population. We have to contract society's ability to sustain 8 billion or more people. And if you go for green energy grids, Green New Deals, solar panels and windmills, that type of energy source is of such a low grade, low quality type of energy that you cannot power the industrial activities necessary to support 8 billion or more people. You could maybe support 1 billion or so people at a lower quality of life, except for a selected few of, you know, at the top who are supposed to be the beneficiaries of the pyramid. But really, it's a depopulation agenda.
Wow. So let me ask then. Yeah. So that's the Green New Deal